So is it dry January for you, James?
Well, it's dry every day for me right now. Mm-hmm. So January, April, Gatil's Day, whatever it is. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Well, this is being recorded in January. It'll probably be February when it gets out there. I'm having an opposite problem. I'm having to enforce a wet January here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I had a bit of an issue that I think you pointed out to me a while back. I went on a bit of a tear in October, November, December of just really hoarding too much product in my house. Mm-hmm. And if you recall, I sent you a picture and you said, oh my God, you know that stuff will go bad, right? Do you recall?
Oh, I do recall. Yes, absolutely.
So I ran into one the other day. I popped one open. I'm like, this has been here for a little while. And sure enough, not good.
Yeah.
So now I've got a renewed focus on cranking through what I've got, partially also because it's winter. I love all the nice porters that are out right now. And I feel like I can't buy anything because I got so much here. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of doubling down and trying to crank my way through what I've got.
You got the buyer's remorse now. That's what you got.
Oh, I guess it's my remorse is more about the speed and volume at which I bought. I should have gone to, you know, more variety and less, oh, this is good. I want to make sure I have it around whenever I want it. And then there's a pile of it that is sitting here until the next thing catches my eye.
Did you buy it because you wanted to try it? Because you're like, oh, this is cool and this is new and I want to get it? Or what? I mean, what was the deal?
There's a little of everything there. So, for example, the place in town, Reverie, I always talk about. Whenever they put something new out, unless it's got lactose in it, I go over there and I grab some because, you know, I want to try the new. When I've gone, for example, on my pilgrimage with my teenager to drag her with me across the state to buy from Broadbrook, I don't get there that often, I load up because I'm not going to make that trip all the time. Hmm. But the result there is that I then sit there and go, oh, I want to conserve those. But then they sit too long.
Right. It's so, like, I want to save them. Well, what are you saving them for?
Exactly. Exactly. There's only so long. I went there last time. Did I buy 5 4 packs? Well, that's 20 beers. That's a lot of beer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that happens. And then I'll just be in a liquor store because that's, you know. That's what used to be going into, you know, a record store for me is now going into a liquor store. I'm just here to browse. Really, I am.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then I come home later with something else. Exactly. I come home mm-hmm. with more. And then, of course, the new NA thing that you and I both been getting into. The problem there is that most of what I want to try from them, I have to mail order. And if you want to mail order and get free shipping, you got to order a lot. And that seems to have an even shorter shelf life, I would say. So that's been problematic. So yeah, I have too much liquid in my little refrigerator down here in the basement. And I am, you know, luckily, Today is the 10th of January. It's day two of 2 days of triple headers of NFL playoffs. So that gives me a lot of opportunity to sit and crank through some of this. I did a good job yesterday. I'm coffeeing it up right now, and in a couple hours, I got to get back to work on that fridge.
Well, I'm proud of your dedication. I feel a little dirty saying that, given the context, but
I learned a valuable lesson. I'm going to pay for it.
So I think this is one. You can blame this on COVID and the fact that you can't go have flights at all these places, because that would satisfy your try something new.
Totally would satisfy the try something new. I'm also going to blame it on COVID from the perspective of we're so used to, you know, piles of toilet paper and canned soup in our basement that I had the same rationale with beer. It was like, well, I better get some now so I don't have to come back out later. But yeah, that's where I'm dealing with now. I'm a little embarrassed to say I have too much beer in my house. I'm working on it. Oh, although quite a bit less than I had maybe 3 or 4 days ago when I really, you know, honed in on the problem. I've been diligently working through it.
Get up your day drinking game, dude.
I know. That's something I got to. You know what? I would have no problem with the day drinking. It's the fact that almost every night in the evenings, I got to run a kid somewhere.
Oh, sure.
So
one of them has their permit, so it's not the license isn't long away. So
I hope so. We'll see. We're getting there.
You don't live on the boonies like me, where it's okay to send your 14-year-old to town on the tractor.
No, No, we've been going to an office park on the weekends, which is great because there are parking lots and there are roads and there are speed bumps and stop signs, and that's fun, especially for the people that are working there on the weekends, and they see us pull into a parking lot and him do a 3-point turn right near their car, and I'm going, hey, try parallel parking next to that car, you know, why not? And I'm sure the person is in their office on a Saturday going, come on, looking out the window.
No!
And when you see the same other cars pass you 5 and 6 times on the same straightaway with, you know, scared-looking teenager in the driver's seat, everyone's using this office park for the same thing. It's actually pretty funny.
They should put a little toll gate out there and charge you to get in to do it. I mean, come on. These people are not thinking creatively.
They're not. And they have to know what's going on.
Totally. They can even, like, on the weekends, they could roll out little, you know, practice things. Sort of like Safety Town, you know, for, like, your 5-year-old, but now they're 15. And
That's true. They could do something like that.
Put
out some junker cars to parallel park between.
Exactly. Yep. Cones. Orange cones everywhere.
Well, there was – yesterday wasn't a problem, but the last time we were there a few weeks ago, there's a lake. And, of course, where there is a lake, what else are there? Geese. So there was one section we couldn't even go to because there were constantly geese crossing the street. And my son was just like, I don't know what to do about those geese. And I'm like, well, I don't know what to tell you. You could drive right up to them. You can honk at them. They do not give a shit.
Nope. They will. They just won't even bother looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, they could even set up like loudspeakers with random like loud horn blasts from semi-trucks and people yelling 4-letter obscenities at you.
I would hate that. Hate that. I used to listen to a radio show in the mornings that their traffic report, the intro music was full of honking and sirens, and I would like run off the road half the time when the intro music came out. Stupidest thing in the world to do. So anyway, hops, right?
Anyway, yeah, I'll talk about hops today, apparently.
Okay. Wow. That was a long intro even for us.
It was a long intro.
I might need a beer.
You got a few to spare.
Yeah, I do. So we always talk about the fact that, you know, broken record here, we get some great ideas from our hopnologists on the Discord for things to talk about.
We solicit. I mean, just where this topic came from, we're going to talk about today was topics. Give us some topic ideas that you want to hear. Otherwise, I'm just going to talk about technical stuff that 3 people care about.
Oh, we solicit ideas. When you talked about soliciting, I wasn't sure where you're going.
Totally different other podcasts. There's so many. We get them. I understand it.
Which before we jump into the topic, that's something we need to talk about that we forgot about. This is episode 101.
Oh, right.
So if you are listening to us on iTunes and Google and wherever else, you may notice that there was an episode 99. And now we're on episode 101. Where did episode 100 go? Those shitheads can't count. They can't count. We can count just fine.
That's regardless of this reason. But yes, that's true.
So what we decided to do, we were once again soliciting our hopnologist team and saying, what do you want us to do for episode 100? We're excited. We hope they're excited. We wanted to do something interesting and different for episode 100, not just have same old, same old. And we got a lot of feedback on that was kind of mixed between either talking to people in the industry and interviewing someone and just, you know, hey, keep on doing what you're doing, gang. So we decided to mix those two. And episode 100 was us interviewing each other about us, just kind of getting deep into our respective brains.
Yep.
Be they as they are. But we also decided that was going to go directly to the patron community. So if you want to hear episode 100, you know what you got to do. You got to sign up, go over to patreon.com/apnology and become a patron, and you'll be able to listen to episode 100, which is all the personal dirt.
A lot of dirt. It's very dirty in there.
It is. It is a little dirty. Yeah. I think it's a mature listeners only episode.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of solicitation. Probably.
That's right. Okay, so are we done with that?
I mean, we're done with that. Episode 101.
10 minutes in. Are we going to like talk about stuff?
I guess. Try to stretch this one out.
For the 6 people that are left listening.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yep. All right. So our patron said to us, what about sensory? And you'll say, wait a minute, we've talked about sensory. Well, sure, we've talked about sensory. We've talked about it from certainly from a drinking beer perspective. And we've talked a bit about hop rubs and making sure when you do that with a brewer, knowing what you're talking about and having a quality set up at your farm and making sure you can give them the ability to do a hop rub. But what should you be looking for as a grower when you're, you know, taking a look at your hops and you're huffing them? What are you looking for? What do you need to know to look for to know if something's right or wrong?
What, do you have an answer?
No, I was going to say and go.
You were driving this. I'm like, oh man, he's finally going to give me an answer to this. This is awesome. I got my notebook out and everything.
Oh, nice. Well, I'm looking at some of the common, some of the things on the flavor map. And of course, my eye goes right toward rotten stale.
Yep.
Because, you know, which interestingly is right next to earthy.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are very similar types.
I think, did I talk about that before? Where we were talking about descriptors? Mm-hmm. They are very similar because the quick recap. We tend to, everybody does this in every language. It smells like blank. It tastes like blank because we are not good at describing these complex interplays between individual aromas and fragrances and flavors, right? It smells like rotting vegetables. It smells like tropical fruit. Well, what does that mean? You know intrinsically based on your native language and, you know, what that means in the lexicon, but tropical fruit smells like, well, tropical fruit, right? How do you describe something like that to say, well, just dissect that? So, Greg, dissect tropical fruit smell. What does tropical fruit smell like?
So, when I think tropical fruit, I mean, I go right to pineapple. Which to me is a bit
What does pineapple smell like?
Sharp is a word I would use. I don't know why, but that just comes to me. The the other tropical fruits like the mangoes, papayas, that family, I get sort of a soapiness from them.
Or what does soapy smell like?
What does soapy smell like? But well, you're making your point, which is that I'm just using other things. It's like saying, you know, what does blue look like? Well, it looks like blue.
Yep, that's exactly right. So as a scientist, as a sensory scientist, I have to separate that analytical part from the part that we need to communicate in a common language about what this experience is. Because to me, for instance, let's take cilantro. I love the aroma and flavor of cilantro. To other people, they hate it because to them, it tastes like they have a mouthful of soap. Mm-hmm. Like Dawn dishwashing liquid. There's a specific reason for that. It's a genetic issue. Results in different sensory perception deficits. But if I were to describe the flavor of cilantro to you, and then you tasted it, and you're just like, holy balls, that doesn't taste anything like what you described it about. Now we have this disconnect. Just because I describe it to you as to what I think it tastes like, it's not going to taste that same way to you. Just like, and that's my absolute core issue with all of these freaking sensory wheels and maps and tests, is that as we try to teach people what a hop variety smells like or tastes like, it gets muddied very quickly as we try to describe it in words. It is something that needs to be experienced, which is why every single, and I've been through several of these, attended several, every single virtual hop rub, virtual experience on trying to teach aroma science, aroma analysis, is a total waste of time.
But
we're going to do it today. No, we're not. We're not going to talk about, you know, how to huff hops virtually, because it, you know, we're not going to teach you about, you know, hey, Brewer's Gold smells like this, and, you know, Magnum smells like this. That is highly individualized. However, having said that, we can broadly bracket some of this stuff into tropical fruit, into piney, into earthy, like you said, or rotten vegetables, based on their chemical attributes. So that's my whole caveat to this. Because some people may say, wait a minute, I don't get blueberries at all out of Mosaic. I can believe that, right? What do blueberries smell like? Well, they smell like blueberries. Right? But I mean like actual blueberries, because I think a lot of people in their experience, they could tell you what artificial blueberry tastes like and smells like. And is that what you're talking about? So, I mean, I don't want to split hairs here, but you very, very quickly, when we start talking about this topic, evolve into the hair splitting realm.
Mm-hmm. Well, we end up with Kevin going, but wait a minute. That's not what I get. And, you know, everyone's got a different nose and a different palate. And you certainly have, I was going to say more refined one, but then I just have to make a joke. You know, you've been doing this for so long, you can identify a lot of those nuances. I know that I, for example, just don't. I miss a lot of these things that are in there. And even looking at a flavor map and looking at the, you know, peach versus apricot versus nectarine on the stone fruit side, I couldn't possibly tell those apart. You could give me those three fruits and I wouldn't be able to tell them apart.
And I want to say, who assigned that attribute to that hop?
I'm sure someone who you disagree with.
Well, I don't know what your sensory adaptation is. So I can't tell you whether you're going to find apricots in there. I might have, but if I look at, if I want to be empirical about this and I look at the chemicals that are in that various hop variety, the aroma compounds, and look to other fruits or flowers or whatever, I can make some associations. Say, okay, well, this has about as half as much whatever compound that apricots have. So yeah, I could see that. But when none of those compounds are present in that hop variety that should be present in whatever it is that we're describing the simile or metaphor for that variety, mm-hmm. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? There's no way in hell. Oh, it might be in there, but it's, you know, 100 times lower than the sensory threshold. So what the hell? So having this language, how do we describe these things? Don't do it. Just don't do it. And I'm thinking about this from a grower's side as they are working with a brewer. Do not influence them. Because at the end of the day, it's about what they perceive and about what they want in their beer, not about what you perceive. Yeah. So that's from working with the brewer side.
That's very true. And you've mentioned this before when we've talked about the hop rubs and the fact that you do not want to lead at all with, oh, don't you get the notes of da da da. Let them sense what they sense, because it is so – this is the milk orange juice thing we've talked about. Take a swig out of a glass you think has milk in it and there's orange juice in it, and you go, your brain creates the flavor.
Having said all of that, let's discuss setting up a sensory expose for your brewer customer. How are you going to do this? Here are my suggestions. Number one, you know, you'll bring in your hop samples, ideally their whole cone. Dried to 8 to 10% moisture content, vacuum sealed, all the good stuff you know that I get twitchy about. So you're going to do that. Go into the brew house, hopefully on a non-brew day, because the air is going to be permeated with the smell of stewing malt. So you want to try to avoid that, or go out into the tap room or someplace where you're not going to have the sensory overload. That also includes having them come out to the farm. Don't take them into the harvest barn. Go someplace else. Because you're going to, you want a clean aroma space. Think about it like that. Also, don't take them into the machine shed where everything smells like diesel fuel. Yeah. Don't want to do that. So that's the first thing you're going to do. You want to lay out a clean space. Yep. And usually what I like to do is have a large flat surface area. how large, as much space as is reasonable. I've taken up, you know, a 4x8 sheet of plywood and put it on sawhorses and then covered it in plastic and paper, because they're also going to be looking at color when they're doing this. So, and color, it's interesting. If you put hops on a green background versus a blue background, it will influence people's perception of what that hop smells like. Do you need to go to this degree when you're dealing with brewers? I don't know. How much do you want to mess with their mind? But I always defaulted to a white background, but just because, or like, I would avoid like brown craft paper because it's going to make your hops look like shit. Or put it on something that contrasts with the hop, like blue or purple or something like that. That will negate any kind of bias there. Also helps with the presentation. You're going to want to have multiple, if you can, ideally multiple samples of the same variety. They could be from different harvest days. They could be from different drying lots. They could be from whatever. I would say only do this if you could offer the brewer those hops from that particular subset sample, like a lot. You know, this lot of Cascade versus this lot of Cascade. If you've got them separated and baled that way or whatever, great. If you don't, then don't do that. You're going to want to give them multiple samples of the same. You don't want to give them multiple samples of the same lot because they may say, I like that one, but not that one. And then what are you going to do? You're like, they're all the same. So then you throw all kinds of crazy bias into your sampling. So what I would do is whatever varieties they're interested in, bring them out. If you can offer them separate lots, great. If you can't, don't offer them multiple samples of the same lot. You also want to have at hand a squirt bottle of isopropyl or denatured alcohol. Preferably isopropyl alcohol with no scent in it. Yeah. So people are like, well, I use hand sanitizer. Don't use hand sanitizer because it's also usually got some sort of fragrance in it. Mm-hmm. Get rid of it. Just use straight up, you know, even 70% isopropyl alcohol will do, and a bunch of paper towels. And not just a little bottle of isopropyl alcohol. You're going to need a lot of it because you want to get lupulin off your hands completely in between hop rubs. And then you want your hands to evaporate all that isopropyl off of them before you move on to the next one. So you want to have that at the ready as well. Some people like to put out in little tiny little Dixie cup type things, coffee grounds, to inhale after, in between samples, to sort of cleanse your nose and all that kind of stuff. I don't do that because that is a very strong aroma and it can overpower your sniffer senses. So the default is to have them roll up their sleeve and smell the bend in their elbow.
Huh. Oh, that's interesting.
It's a completely neutral aroma, and it's your own body aroma, so you're used to it, and it will reset without overpowering your sense of smell.
Okay, you need to pause here and give everyone the chance to recover from pulling over in their cars and smelling their elbow, because I know I just did it.
You did.
And everyone's doing it.
Uh-huh. But you need to, don't do it with your shirt sleeve down. You need to get some bare skin action going on there. That usually suffices. If you want to do the whole coffee grounds thing, I would have it at a completely different other station. I don't recommend it, but do what you will, because you're going to anyway.
And interesting, because you see the coffee grounds thing at a candle shop as well, for example, you know, and which are, you know, perfume bombs, basically.
Right. And I think in those scenarios, it's probably better justified, because the aroma that levels in those freaking candles and soaps, to me, are way over the top. And so you need something equally strong to counteract that, where hops are, the aromas that are in hops are much, much more subtle. And I find people, when they're huffing coffee grounds or lemons or some other thing that are so different from hop, but yet very, very strong, they have a lot harder time differentiating the details in the hop flower. So I just, yeah, that's all I'm going to say about that. Hmm. So you've got your table set up. You've got your background set up. You've got your hop samples ready to pull. You've got all your data at hand. You know, they're going to want to know, well, what's the chemistry on these and blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't lead with that. Let that come later once they've done their inspection, because they're going to say, what's the oil level on these? And you're going to give them a number, and that's going to influence what they are going to perceive as, or it's going to prejudice them as to what they think is going to be the more aromatic variety. Yep. Oil level, total oil content has absolutely nothing to do with the level of aromatic in that variety. Nothing, zero. So don't even give them the data until after they're done. You want this to be pure, clean space. Then you're gonna rub the hops. And I've talked about how to rub hops before, how to huff them, how to grind them up. And I don't want to get too deep into that because we're already at 30 minutes almost. So you're going to grind these up. You're going to do that. If you want to learn how to huff hops, go back and listen to some of our previous episodes on aromas. You're going to walk them through how to do this, how to look at the multiple levels of aroma that's in there. And it's not just one huff. You're going to grind these things up in your hand. You're going to huff it, and you're going to wait a little bit. And you're going to huff it again. And then describe that, and you're going to wait a little bit. And sometimes you even put them down, clean your hands, and go to a different variety, and then come back to it. Because one, you can't just describe a hop variety with one huff. And I think that's what people don't get. They're like, how do you get apricots out of this? All I smell is dank or something like that, right? It's because you have to let these various levels of compounds peel away as they volatilize after you crush the lupulin glands and add a little heat from friction. Then you go back and you huff them again, and you huff them again, and see how their aroma changes over time. That's how we do this. It's not just one grind and you're done. The brewers that grind them up and they smell them, they grind them up, they smell them, and they're like, oh yeah, I really like this one. And then they move on. I'm like, what are you doing? Right? You're getting the big blast up front, and then you're not looking at any of the other nuances that are buried underneath that.
Right. Now, do you give them anything to fill out, any kind of monitoring system, so that when they do go through 5, 8, 10, 15 of these, they can go back and recognize what they were looking at? Or do you rely on them to have their own mechanism?
The really good ones will have their own notepad, and they'll be taking notes. They will. Those are usually ones that have gone through some sort of sensory training. The vast majority of your brewer customers will have no idea what they're doing. They'll just think, I'm going to rub hops and smell them. If I like them, I'll take them. Well, what is it? What do you mean you like them? So how much value add are you going to give to your brewer for this experience? So are you going to teach them how to do this? Or are you just going to let them sniff them and see, yeah, none of these are really blowing up my skirt. Well, why? What is it that you're looking for? Then they'll say, well, I want something that's tropical fruity, right? Because that's all the rage right now. Sure. Or they'll say, I don't know, but I know it when I find it. Well, you're wasting your time with those people. I mean, whatever. You know, go find somebody else that appreciates what you're doing. Those are also usually the brewers that their first question is how much? Not in volume, but in price. How much are these?
Of course.
And then you're like, nah, not interested.
Yeah. Could you put them in order for me in decreasing price so that I can make my decision that way on the table?
Correct. Yeah. Now, as a grower, if you want to assess your own aroma as maybe compared to, let's say you get a hold of some from, let's say you get a hold of some Cascade from the Pacific Northwest, and you get a hold of some Cascade from Michigan and some from Virginia, and you want to assess them for their different attributes because of the mythical terroir. Okay, that's a different setup. Now you're trying to specifically differentiate between these hop varieties, or between these varieties from different locations. Same principles apply. All the same setup still applies. If you can leave your bias at the door, such that, okay, this one's from the Cascade region, this one's from the middle of Michigan, and this one's from the Finger Lake region of New York. If you can know which ones of those samples are which and be okay with that so it doesn't cloud your judgment, fine. Do you need to do a single blind study? Doesn't hurt, but you can't really do that by yourself. So You would need somebody to mix those samples up for you. And then what I would do is, if you really want to dig deep into those, you want to subdivide each one of those samples into at least three. You can randomize them if you want. I wouldn't. If you're a novice at this, I would know which varieties are which, but I would want you to run through this same test multiple times on the same variety and see what you find. That can be tough if you can't, like I said, keep your bias at the door. By doing this, by running through the same sample multiple times, you lock into your sense memory the attributes that are in that hop from, you know, whatever designation that you've given it, wherever it's from. And then you can move on, and then you have something to come back to. You can walk through this with all your varieties to help you and understand your descriptor. I think people want to know, well, how much is my location impacting my hop variety? So that I can talk about, well, my cascade are X, Y, and Z more. Well, to do that, you're going to have to build a library of notes. So that means you're going to have to be very, very meticulous about the notes that you take year over year on your variety when you are doing these hop rubs.
The notes you take in your weatherproof notebooks from our Amazon wishlist?
That's exactly right. Correct. But this is going to take quite a bit of practice to do this. And unfortunately, this is not something that I can teach you to do virtually. Something we have to practice physically. You know, think about it as the lab section of a lecture. You need that lab in order to do the practical, apply the practical aspects of what you were just lectured on.
Sure.
So maybe when the COVID's over and we can all get together, maybe we can host a practical somewhere where we can teach people how to do this if that's what they want to do. But that's how you do it. And over time, year over year, you're going to build a sense for, wow, this hop really does have a lot more X, Y, or Z attribute compared to maybe something that you're going to find from the Pacific Northwest. I'm going to call bullshit on that for now, but we know that it's true for some varieties, but not all varieties. Mm-hmm. And I would hazard a guess that your year-over-year production practices are going to have a way bigger influence on any, quote, terroir that you're going to find from the genetics of that plant. But that's my opinion. Actually, there was some data to back that up, so prove me wrong. That's how you do it. That's how you set it up. And like I said, we don't have to dig too deep into the actual rubbing of the hop because we've talked about that a few times.
We have. And I would just point out, you know, on the line of the ABC, they'll always be closing when you're trying to sell to these brewers. You talked a lot about presentation and the green background and making sure you're far away from fuel and other scents and things like that. Remember, and we've talked about this in detail before, we won't go deep into it now, you're bringing these potential customers or existing customers to your place of business. Anything within sight needs to be up to standard. You've got to focus a lot on what we just talked about, certainly, but you want to make sure when they get there, they're at best impressed with what they see, at least not completely turned off and disgusted by what they see. This is a working farm, so, you know, there's plenty to be disgusted by. Right?
James, you go hide over there around the corner. They don't want to see anything disgusted that might turn them off.
Exactly. But, you know, think about that. It's because all I can picture is all this focus on that table with the paper and the plastic and the green background. And then, you know, 30 feet away is a huge pile of soaking wet core twine that's moldy. And but that's not what you're here to see. Well, cover that shit. So just want to throw that out there. You're bringing them home. When you bring the girlfriend home, clean things up a little.
Yeah. Make sure your room's in clean, you know. Your underwear's not hanging on the back of your chair. All of that presentation is super critical. If you're doing it at a brew house, obviously you can't control all of those factors, but I would at least insist that you go somewhere besides the brew house to do this.
Yeah, there's a smell there too that you can't get away from.
Correct. So go out into the tap room, go someplace else that you can do this, even go into the brewery offices and get the input from the office people that are in there. What do they think? That goes a long way. I did want to mention, though, like the ASBC, American Society of Brewing Chemists, has a little kit or a chart, you know, it talks about, you know, this is how you do hop sensory analysis. That is true. There is an ASBC scientific method for this. This is not what you are going to do. because it and even sensory scientists that look at that protocol are like, did a chemist write this? Because damn, not the best. Anyway, but they've got gobs and gobs and gobs of descriptors of aroma compounds. You know, this is what it smells like. And I think one of our hopnologists pointed out that the Hop Growers of America, I think, had on their website, you know, a list of this giant list of varieties and attributes, you know, aroma attributes listed for these varieties. And one of them, I think it was Magnum. Every single one of the dozen or so categories had a check mark by it.
Yeah, right. It smelled like everything.
Right. It smells like everything. I'm like, what does that mean? Those kind of data are absolutely pointless.
They really are.
Because it sets up in your mind what it's supposed to smell like when, frankly, it could be like, yep, it's got apricots and peaches and watermelon and guava and skunk and flowers and all this kind of stuff. It's like, really? At what level? And to who? One of the ones I commented on our Discord was about Brewer's Gold, and they had fruity checked. I'm like, what? How in the hell did anybody get fruity out of Brewer's Gold?
And that is,
if that was the case, it'd be used all over the frickin' place. But it isn't, because there's no frickin' fruity in it.
Right. And that is, I mean, you've said this many times before, that's your favorite hop ever. So
yeah. I'm like, no, it's resinous and spicy and herbal. And I mean, where in the hell do you get fruity from? What's wrong with you people? I very much would like you to take all of those classifications that you are expecting to get for any given variety and throw them out the freaking window. Because frankly, those descriptors aren't going to get you a sale. It's the interfacing with the brewers to allow them to experience the hop. And don't be prejudiced by, oh yeah, this guy makes a lot of, you know, hazy IPAs, so he's going to want big, bombastic, tropical fruit, and I don't have much, so I got to talk that up. No, don't do that. I think your best course of action with any of those brewers is to educate them on how to do this and how to pick things apart. And ultimately, these people are creative people, right? They're going to be looking for things that you don't have any concept of. And they're already thinking about different things. They're going to smell hop and be like, oh my God, this would go great with this X, Y, or Z. And I've been thinking about making one of those. You'd be like, oh yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what it would go great in. So don't assume that what they're looking for, if it isn't in your hop variety repertoire, that you have to somehow drum it up or make something that's not there. Let them decide.
That's a great point, because I mean, face it, what's more fun, getting one more screwdriver when you've got a big pile of screwdrivers, or getting a wrench that you never had before? Ooh, I can mm-hmm. do different things.
Yep, that's exactly right. New toy. Oh wow, this would be great here or there. Sometimes when you start having that dialogue and start having that discussion, you can start saying things like, well, you know what? I know you've got that amber or whatever. And he's like, yeah, it's in the tap room. I'm like, yeah, but man, if you could just maybe tweak that up a little bit with this little spiciness on the back end. And I think that hop would go great in there. And people, oh yeah, man, you're right. How much of this do you have? Done. Sale. Boom. And you start having that dialogue with them on that level as it applies directly to their product, you're in like Flynn. If they're rubbing hops, like I said earlier, and they're like, do you have anything that smells like Mosaic? Yeah, just pack it up, because they don't understand or appreciate the nuances that are available to them. They just want glitter paint. They want, you know, you're trying to sell, you know, artist fine oils for canvas to somebody. All they want is puffy glitter paint for a t-shirt. So come on. Don't waste your time.
I know we would normally end it there. I need to circle back to the beginning briefly, only because while we were on this call, while we were recording this episode, I received a text. I'm going to read it to you. FedEx from Bravis delivered at 10:59 a.m. So sitting in my driveway right now is another 12-pack of beer.